Welcome to the Fantasy Golf Degenerates Podcast.
Jordan Bell, third. Jordan Bell, third. Yo, yo. Jordan Belfort, stacking penny stocks while I'm flipping these birds. Sipping on Ciroc, trip them up with the words. I done popped the Molly and I think it's be my third. Jordan Belfort, Jordan Belfort. I've been getting dirty money, Jordan Belfort. Jordan Belfort, I've been getting dirty money, Jordan Belfort. Stacking penny stocks while I'm flipping these birds.
What is going on, DGen Nation? Kenny Kim is back for another Fantasy Golf Degenerates podcast this week for the Houston Open. Sorry I missed last week. Work got in the way, but I'm back this week, and we're getting close to the Masters, too. It's a great time of the year. It's going to be fun as usual. I am here with the Canadian Pitbull, Tyler Tambolini. Tyler, how you doing this week?
I'm doing good, Kenny. Good to have you back, man. Thanks again to Baroff for filling in last week. It was an awesome show. It wasn't my best week. It wasn't a bad week, but it was a sad week because I exited the Fantasy Golf World Championship, and I was down to two lineups, and you guys saw the one that I used in the four-man. That's the other lineup I was considering, and it would have finished in 20th and easily moved on, so that kind of sucked. But, yeah, still a good week. You know, you get some money out of that. I think it was $3,000 for making it that far, but you know, go after it again next year. But now I'm just forced to put all that money back into the economy and play the mega for $4,500 here, and you know, in another week at the Masters. But it is what it is. It was good times, man. You know, good to have you back on. Before we go into this week, guys, want to quickly remind you this podcast is presented and sponsored by rotogrinders.com. Head on over to rotogrinders.com/dgen. Get yourself $5 off the first month. You can check out all the core four main sports, everything right now, obviously football, PGA, that's the two that are going on, and I'm doing content for all that stuff across the board. So, but yeah, Kenny, talk to me about your week though. I know, you know, big Brian Gay winner, you got in there live and hit a bet, but it was just another 40 plus year old guy getting it done, man, against the young Wyndham Clark, who we're probably all cheering for around the industry here. But yeah, Brian Gay gets the job done and your bankroll stacked now.
Yeah, my ass was not cheering for Wyndham Clark. I could tell you that right now. You know, the old guys are coming through. Stuart Sink, Sergio, Party Marty Laird. What'd you say?
Yeah, Martin Laird was another one.
Yep. And then, you know, this week with 48-year-old Brian Gay. What a performance by him. I mean, it was so clutch. You could sort of see what was happening late in the round. When Wyndham Clark got the lead, he sort of played not to win, a lot of irons off the tee, not being quite as aggressive until he got to 18. He poured that driver down, 18 twice. And even in the playoffs, he pulled that driver out, hit some nice drives. But if he did that before on a couple of the other holes and didn't play to lose, I think he had a better chance. Now, what you saw with Brian Gay was probably experience. You know, even though we haven't seen much of him, you know, in the last few years, he hasn't won in, 7 years. You know, I think his experience, and he's won, I think, 4 or 5 times on tour already. He has that in his brain already. He knows how to perform in those situations. And it's not like the pressure didn't get to him. Of course, he's feeling the pressure. I mean, even the best in the world in that type of situation would feel the pressure. You can go back to Justin Thomas a couple weeks ago when he had the one-shot lead going into the final round and couldn't keep it. And then Cantlay came in and closed it out. But what I really noticed was on 17, you know, that was a really bad bogey by Brian Gay on 17. On a par 5, he three-putted. The guy never three-putts. He's been one of the better putters on tour for his whole career. The crazy thing is, you know, he's kept his tour card for like 20 years or something. You know what I'm saying? Like he's never lost his card. And like that takes a lot. That's pretty damn good when you're that type of golfer, a fringe type golfer who's never really going to be elite, to keep his card for that many years is really impressive. What he did on 17, he three-putted. And then coming back on to 18, that approach shot from the rough with a little bit of a slopey lie to hit that within 2 feet for a tap-in was sick. And then, you know, you see Wyndham Clark miss the putt on 18 for the win. And then in the playoff, of course, you know, Wyndham hits it 30 yards past him on a drive. They both had great drives. Brian Gay hits it to about 15 feet. Wyndham hits it to about 10. And Gay, in true match play form, hits that thing right in the bottom of the cup, puts the pressure on Wyndham, and Wyndham can't make that final putt to win. So it was great. And so I actually bet Brian Gay live Friday night. So, you know, I don't, as most of you know, I don't drink during the week anymore. So on Fridays, I get lit, like beyond lit, like crazy. I make up for all the lack of drinking that I do in the middle of the week on Friday night, okay? And so like 3 a.m. or something, it was late. Maybe not that late, but it was late. I was looking through the book that I'm using, and I go ahead and I'm like, oh, Brian Gay, he shot pretty well Friday. He can putt. Oh, let me 125-1. Let me just throw that down there. And then I totally forgot I put the bet in because, you know, I was hammered until like, you know, Sunday morning, and I'm looking through my bets. I'm like, who do I have? Blah, blah, blah. I'm like, oh, when the hell did I make this bet? Hell yes. And then you see him go, and he goes ham on Friday. I think, what did he shoot, like 31 or 29 on the back, something like 30 on the back with a bogey. Really good stuff. So how was your week? I mean, what did you think about the event?
Yeah, the event was not ideal. Like I said, you probably saw the title of the pod last week. You weren't on it, but we so carefully named it the Bermuda Dumpster Fire because it was basically, you know, championship. That was sort of the dub nickname because it was just so bad. And it just, you know, one of the things that stood out to me, I guess, and Baroff and I even talked about it last week, was when you looked at the leaderboard from the year before. It had only been played here once before. Brendan Todd had won it. Now, funny that now you see Brian Gay was third the year before here, comes back and wins it. But, you know, one of the things that stood out, and I guess I didn't pay enough attention to it, was that the board was pretty boring the year before. Like only Scheffler and Wise, maybe, you know, Hank Lebioda, you know, Harry Higgs. There was a couple guys in there. And if you go back to this year, what do you see? Gay, you know, Sink, Jones, Hearn, Armour, like all these guys again. And, you know, it's just one of those things, right? It's just takes some precision, takes some, definitely some experience down the stretch. That shot by Brian Gay on 18 to put it down to, what was it, 2 feet? And then force, you know, eventually, you know, force the playoff. That was something to see. Like, that's, again, just ice in your veins, on the line, everything. I don't know. There's obviously luck involved, but it just seemed like it was just going to go that way the whole time to me just watching it. So, yeah, you know, Clark had his chances, seemed to be in, you know, pretty good spirits after. It obviously sucks to lose, but, you know, he was right there. He was in the mix. He had a shot. We'll see what he can do this week. It's kind of interesting that he's back in the field again. But other than that, man, not a lot stood out. Cool to see Ollie Schneiderjans up there. Baroff really liked him last week. Mentioned him quite a few times. 6,200 was just too low for him. Saw that. Other than that, Doc, Denny, you know, just nothing that excited me. Like, if you look at this board, it just was definitely one of the least exciting events of the year as far as golf goes. But nevertheless, man, we got one more here right now. The Houston Open, two things. One, pump because the Houston Open, not this location, not this time of year, but is my biggest win ever in DFS when Poulter came back and beat Hostler in that event. That was a six-figure Sunday, so gotta love that. Some good vibes there. Get back into the swing of things. It's a new month, November. And then, yeah, like you said, man, 1 week away from the Masters. So I know we got a big election coming up here first for all you Americans out there and yourself, Kenny. So you got that. And then, you know, next week we're going into the Masters, man, the most exciting major of the year.
Yeah. I mean, just a couple of, yeah, there's definitely, I can't wait for the Masters, but a couple of other things about this event. I think Denny's going to have a win soon. I did hear, you know, we've all been talking about, I heard on another podcast that he has a new swing coach, and we've sort of seen his swing be rejuvenated a little bit with a better tee to green game, better iron game here lately. That could be something that could be playing a factor. You see the old man Sink still balling out there. Doc Redman, who I think a win is on the horizon very soon for him. And then, of course, my man Ryan Armour, who, you know, basically is not that very good. But one of my biggest bets last week was, other than the Brian Gay bet, I put a pretty big shot, I think like 40, 50 bucks on Ryan Armour top 20. That hit. I've been actually really on a heater here recently when it comes to betting-wise. Like, my favorite bet of the week on the site I write for, it's well over 50% win percentage. It's won quite a few times in the last month. Usually they're top 20 bets or top 10 bets that I've hit here recently, a whole bunch of those. The Armour bet was nice. I've been hitting a lot of football bets as well. I'm like 7-0 in my last 7 football bets. Like this past week, I bet the Falcons, the Steelers and the Seahawks, all, you know, they all did their thing. And then, of course, tomorrow is the election. And even though I might have voted for Biden, I bet on Trump because I think, I don't know, there's a lot of undercover Trump people out there, and I think that he might win. So for both political parties there, you can't hate me because, you know, I might have voted for Biden, but I'm betting on Trump tomorrow. So that's how it's going to go for that. Yeah, it's going to be chaos. So actually, I went to I had a meeting downtown in D.C. For another job that we're trying to get on Friday, and all the stores were boarding up like it was going to be like a hurricane or something. They are expecting some wild shit in my city coming up, depending on who wins tomorrow. So it's gonna, if we're alive, if the world is still standing, we'll definitely have the Masters Pod next week, maybe early, depending on when the pricing comes out. But we'll see what happens with like the world starting tomorrow. So no listener league this week. Did you already go over that?
No, actually, good call, and you mentioned it just now. Yeah, if we get the pod out early, or if we don't, the good news is I'm told that, so first off, the listener league is back for this week. I tweeted it out today. If you guys don't follow me, at Toe Tech and Tambo on Twitter, you can go check it out. And then we retweet it on the, you know, Fantasy Golf Degenerates Twitter as well, so you guys can get in. It's back to the 750 man, $500 up top, 50 bucks to 10th place, you know, $5 three max that we've always had with low rake. It's around 10%, but it, you know, it's, if it hasn't been filling, it's actually better than that, right? So there's that situation. But anyway, because of last week's miss, they've now doubled it for the Masters, is what they've promised us. So it's going to be a 1500 men, nice little balance structure, $5 three max, low rake is again. But if it depends on when they get it out, if it doesn't get out early enough and it doesn't end up filling, that's just the extra overlay they're paying us back with, paying forward to you guys, that it'll be a bigger tournament with some good money up top, possibly very low rake, and worst case scenario, around 10%. So I think it's good. I'm excited to be back in it again this week. We had a nice little four-man last week with Baroff. Winner of each one, as you guys know, gets into our year-end tournament, which will be bigger this year and better even than last year. We just had our first one, and it was a lot of fun, I think. And then you've got, you know, the three-man with Kenny and I, the free month at Roto Grinders, pretty much everything you can ask for. And in the meantime, you win $500 for winning the tournament. So it's a lot of fun, and it's back again this week. So go check that out and get yourself in there at least once, if not three times.
All right, so let's head to this week. The PGA Tour heads to Houston, Texas for the Vivint Houston Open from Memorial Park Golf Course. This is another course that appears to have limited information in terms of PGA play, just like it's been the last few weeks. This makes it, of course, a little bit tougher to figure out what to look for in golfers. But there is some information we can look at to try and make it easier. The course was originally designed by John Brennemus, who also did some work in the design of Colonial Country Club. Recently, though, in the last year, the course was redesigned by Tom Doak. And although none of Tom Doak's courses have had a PGA Tour run, he did intern for Pete Dye. There have been some speculation that Sawgrass and other Dye courses could be seen as correlated courses, since Doak has spoken about how much influence Dye has had on his career. Another aspect for this week is the Korean connection, as the majority of Korean golfers on tour live in the Houston area. I'm not really sure how many of them have played the course since the redesign, but they could have the advantage of sleeping in their own beds every night. And of course, having, you know, if they live in the area, they're used to the Texas winds, which could be a factor, especially when it comes to this weekend. So roster all Koreans. It's one of those weeks. Once again, my people. So Memorial Park is a 7,450-yard par 72 with five par fives and five par threes. So we're seeing this five and five again this week. Two of the par fives should be reachable by all golfers in two. Two of the other par fives will be reachable by longer golfers unless there is wind at the golfer's back, which could lead to more golfers trying for eagle. The par five eighth hole is a mammoth 630 yards and should play as a three-shot hole for most. Three of the par threes range from 200 to 235 yards, and the last two are much shorter, ranging from 155 to 167 yards. Now, when it comes to the par fours, two play fairly short with yardage right at or just below 400 yards. Three par fours range from 440 to 455 yards, and three are very long, ranging from 490 to 505 yards. Now, looking at this, I think we see a fair amount of shots from over 200 yards every round, either off the tee or on approaches onto the green. Off the tee, golfers will see tree-lined fairways that have been widened a bit by Tom Doak. I'm not exactly sure how wide they truly are, and I'll try and update this in my article Wednesday. I do an add-on on Wednesday afternoons. From what I've heard, the trees aren't too bunched like they are at Colonial, and golfers will have outs most of the time when they miss wildly into the trees. The one thing you won't see much of is bunkers. There are only about 20 bunkers on the course, with only two water hazards that are in play on four holes. The rough around the fairways is Bermuda grass and should be around 2.5 to 3 inches tall. Now, even though the rough isn't like crazy tall, I do hear that it's pretty thick. And when it comes to Bermuda rough, it's easy to get flyer lies. So hitting it in the rough will make it tough to get the correct distance golfers need for their approaches. Now, I don't think missing a lot of fairways will make it impossible to play well, but I do think it might bring the need for a better short game into play. Maybe. We'll see. Of course, we don't really know since they haven't played this course since like 1963, and it's not even close to how it originally looked back then. Now, on approaches, golfers will see above average size Bermuda grass greens. The greens may be slightly large when it comes to square footage, but many are crowned on the edges, and depending on pin locations, the landing areas to have a good birdie chance are pretty small. If golfers miss the greens, they have to deal with many shortly mown runoff areas similar to what we see next week in Augusta. I couldn't find a stint meter rating, so that's another thing that I'll add on to my article on Wednesday. Tambo, what are you looking for in golfers this week? What's your best guess, I guess, since we have really nothing to go on once again?
It's worse, yeah, right? Because it's a course for the first time. It's guys that are waiting. We're deciding what they're doing before the Masters, where everyone's coming out. I'll talk about that in a second more. But, yeah, you know, like you said, five par fives makes it extremely interesting. So I think that's going to come into play. It sounds like the wind won't be there till the weekend. Obviously, check back throughout the week. That can change on a dime. But you mentioned a lot of it. You know, the bunkers thing I thought was kind of funny because Brooks Koepka is – a guy that was involved in the redesign and basically said what I believe is the truth. You know, if I go in the bunker, I'm terrible at golf, you know, but I can break 100. But I'm saying, but if I go out and I go in the bunker, I feel like just take a drop and take the stroke. I don't even care. I hate playing out of the bunker. And he said the opposite, obviously, is what true for the pros, is basically said the pros don't give a shit about bunkers. So it's not going to be a hindrance. If you got a bunch of bunkers out here, just get rid of them. They only mess with the amateurs. So I thought that was interesting. It's like, you know, or was he trying to fix it up for himself? But he's normally got a pretty good bunker game. We've seen at times in the majors and whatnot. But here's the thing, Kenny. I want to know this. How are you handling this narrative, if you will, of the guys that are here, the big names at the top, are apparently, is what I'm hearing out there, is they're not going to try and win this event because they don't want to peak before the Masters next week?
I mean, there's a couple of ways to look at it. I do think the more established golfers might have that feeling where it's just a tune-up. You look at the winners here the past whatever, you know, when it was before the Masters in the past, you're looking at like guys like D.A. Points, Jim Herman, like other names like that, guys with a lot of higher odds. I think first off, when it comes to DJ and Adam Scott with the COVID, I think they're coming just to tune-up. I think a lot of the other bigger names, it's possible that they're going to do that as well, but there's no way that we can judge that at all. Like the Hattons, the Sergios, the Days, the guys that are going to be playing who have like established themselves as really good tour pros for a long amount of time. I think it's possible that this is just a tune-up for these guys, but you can't really, you're just taking a wild guess here. So, I mean, when it comes to DFS, if you like them, play them. Now I'd say the less established guys, you know, and the younger golfers who don't have millions upon millions upon millions of dollars in their bank account that are playing next week, I think those guys you just play. If you like them, you just play. I don't think those guys you have to worry about. The established golfers, the elite golfers, it's definitely something that I would think about I'm not saying don't roster them other than DJ and Scott, because I'm not going to roster those guys, and that's more COVID related as well. But yeah, there's something to think about there. What do you think about that?
I'm pretty much against it. I just think it's dumb, because if you think about it, like DJ, what's more of a statement, you know, coming here for a tune-up and then winning the Masters, or winning this and then coming out winning the Masters right after? You know, you got to win. If they're in the mix, like, sure, I guess if they're, you know, dead on Friday or they wake up and decide, you know, let's get to a guy. I don't know. It's just, I have a hard time believing these guys are going to show up and not play their A game to try and win. You know, there's always these things in the past with, remember, Phil Mickelson, he's just going to go try a bunch of crazy cut shots here because he's going to get ready for Augusta and blah, blah, blah. But I think, you know, we've seen it a couple of times. I remember Ricky Fowler, people saying it about him, and then him making some runs both back to back at the Houston Open and then making a run at the Masters the following week. So I don't know. It's really, there's not a lot of guys. If you think about it, it's going to be like what, DJ, Koepka, I mean, Matsuyama, Hovland, Hatton, those types of guys, they got to win tournaments. Hatton's been doing it. Don't get me wrong. I'm just saying, I don't think Hatton's going to be like, oh, let's just give this one the old college try and pray for Augusta next week. He's going to try and win another tournament. This is huge for him to keep winning over here. This would be awesome. So I'm going to still play guys like him. And then as you go down, it's like I said, a guy like Scott, Sergio, Day. Yeah, they've got the money, but I think they're all going to still, you know, Sergio just won a tournament. So did he already peak? Who knows? It just seems like a crazy narrative. I'm going to play the best golfers and the guys that I like at the top. I don't care.
Yeah, I mean, I think this could be a hot take because we don't know how the course is really going to play. But, like, if some of these guys that you're worried about that are playing next week start – okay, this is a crazy hot take. I just came out of this out of the blue. But if they start round one on the front nine, which has three par fives, and, like, you know, it has three par fives and only one of the par fours are over, what, 443 yards?
Yeah.
I think if, you know, if they start, they can start strong. I think it all depends on how they start, you know, the event. If they fuck up in the beginning, they could just go out for the rest of the couple of days and just try and tune up for what they're going to do for Augusta. I think that's definitely a possibility. And I think, I'm guessing that the front nine will play easier with the shorter par fours, the three par fives. I think there's two longer par threes, but it's not even the mammoth par three, the 235 yarders on the back. You know, you got a couple of par five, you got the 500 yard par five on the back. You got the 490 yard par four, I'm sorry, the 500 yard par four and a 490 yard par four on the back. Like, if you're golfers, like, you know, these elite Day, Sergio, Hatton, DJ, you know, those guys, if they're starting on the front nine, I think it's more realistic. They have a chance to keep doing, you stay for all 4 days and try and win this event, because I think a hot start is a lot easier if you start on the front nine. Total guess, total narrative, because I mean,
total galaxy brain.
Yeah.
Because the guy that starts on the back nine might have like a 2-under round going and then hit the front and just blitz it and be 6-7 under for first round leader.
That's true too.
And then he's ready to rock out for the whole, you know, let's win this thing. And I guess the last thing I'll just say is, like, I think it was actually Phil Mickelson, but it was someone had said it in the past. I read it somewhere today, just saying, if I, you know, what better way to prove I'm ready for next week than to go out and win this event and just dominate here? It's still the Houston Open. It's still a big paycheck. It's still a decent field. There's lots of, you know, talk around it. So I don't know. I'm against it, but yeah, we'll see who you like at the top. But when you got, you know, that'll segue us in. When you've got Dustin Johnson, 11,500, and Tony Finau is 10-9, what do you do?
Like I said, I'm not playing DJ. I'm not playing DJ this week. You know, the only guy who's really come back from COVID and played well is Finau. And the crazy thing is, Finau's the one that admitted it really fucked him up. Like, he was fucked up off COVID. It wasn't just
he took extra time too. Yeah, he did take an extra week or two.
It wasn't like, you know, I got through it easy. It was like the shit really messed me up. Like, I was really sick. He was the only one to really admit that after he came back. And then, of course, he came back and had a top 15 at his first time back. But everyone else we've seen that has, Scheffler, Grace, who am I missing here, Tam, but other guys that have had to come back from it, they haven't really shown that they've been able to do it. So I'm a little worried about that. And again, me and Tam are different on this narrative. I'm thinking more that he might, you know, just be a tune-up. Get game ready for the next week. So
you mentioned the guy there who's hoping that your narrative is true is Tony Finau, because he'd love to pick up a win anytime, let alone.
Well, yes, exactly. So that's why I'm playing Tony.
True, for sure.
I'm playing Tony at this price. It's crazy. I don't know why, but I'm playing Tony because the man has been playing pretty fucking good golf. We'll see if he can finally get his win, but he's been playing pretty decent. 11th, 8th, 5th, 4th, 3rd, 8th, all in his last 10 starts. So, I mean, he's been around that area, you know, and I think that, you know, if you take away DJ, if you just take away DJ, you know, he can beat everybody else in this field pretty handily every time he plays. So I'm going to play Tony. Again, approach game's good. I think he's long enough. I do think length will help a lot this week. I think there's going to be a lot of drivers hit. I think I probably, I'd say 8 or 9 holes at least where drivers are going to be played. There's those three really long par fours that they got. They got the 5 par fives. You know, I think drivers are going to be used a bunch, and Tony's definitely long enough. He'll get those par fives done. If the wind picks up, he's good around the greens. The price is not great for a guy who never wins. That's true, but I'm going to play him. The other guy I'm playing in this range is Brooks. Now, of course, Brooks, if you didn't know, helped redesign this course with Tom Doak. I think he probably knows this course better than almost everyone in the field. I mean, it hasn't been long since it's opened back up, you know, because of COVID and all that stuff. So I don't know how many guys have been able to go out and actually get a chance to play this with the redesign. But Brooks has to know this course pretty damn well if he helped redesign it. So I'm going to play those two guys up top. And the thing is, Koepka, I think when it comes to the narrative that we were talking about, he needs a little bit of momentum going into this event. He's been playing like garbage. You know what I'm saying? And the injury could have something to do with it. But the man was doing some crazy workouts on Instagram less than a month ago where he was bouncing like a 50-pound medicine ball left and right at full speed over and over again. He looks really in shape. Like, you know, he was getting sort of that dad bod there for a little bit. But like recently when I've seen him, he looks like he's pretty in shape. So I'm not too worried about the injury factor. I'm a little bit worried about the not playing good golf factor. But hopefully that was injury related and he can come back this week, garner a little bit of momentum going into the Masters next week, which I think he needs. Who are you playing?
Man, I don't even know. I'm playing DJ. I know that the rest of it up top is hard to decipher because there's a bunch of different angles that I can take here. Like, you know, you mentioned it. Finau actually hasn't been playing good golf. If nobody's going to play him because he's just the craziest price of all time for a guy that doesn't win, I kind of like him. You know, Koepka is actually, you know, in the time he's been playing golf the last little bit here, hasn't been that bad. He's been struggling a little bit with the putter and he's much better on Bermuda grass greens. So, you know, that's an insight piece there. And then the one I really like, I guess here's the two I know I'm playing is DJ and Hatton because Decky's right at 10K where I always hate him, but who knows? It's another, he'd be the guy to play in that same narrative that if nobody else is going to show up, him and Finau really need a win. So that's like the contrarian way to go in tournaments is get your Finau Matsuyama lineups. But Hatton to me, again, people want to keep going away from it. I even went off him a little bit last time, but he just keeps showing it. And he's the guy that, like, I don't think gives a shit about anything else. He's just going to keep trying to win. He always plays with passion. You know, you see it out on the course. He gets pissed, but then he's still up there. Like, man, 10-3 isn't actually that bad if you think about it for this field. And if you go down to, like, you know, 92, 93, 91, you talked about these Sergio Scott Day type plays. Do you want to play them or do you want to just pay up and get a guy like Hatton? Right. So,
yeah, I like that. I thought about Hatton. I'm thinking about playing him.
His stats really line up too, man. Yeah. If you look at everything across the board, even his par five scoring is good. His par three, DraftKings, birdies are better. Everything you can think of, approach, everything for the last 50 rounds. The guy's just dialed, obviously.
Well, also, he's really good with longer irons. He's good on long par threes. There's 3 par threes over 200 yards. I think I am going to play him also because I like a lot of guys in the 7 and 6K range. A ton. I know the field drops off heavily after probably Hovland in skill-wise winning equity. So maybe it would be a good idea playing going stars and scrubs and playing as many of these guys up top in a 10K range as possible. Now, single lineup and entries, I don't know if I'd go. Maybe you could still go with 2 of these guys. Maybe not DJ and one of these guys, but like Hatton and Koepka, yeah, that would probably work. Hatton and Finau, maybe. I like that call on Hatton. I was definitely thinking about him, and you just talked me into playing him, especially with, like, I have all these names written down for the 7K range. It's like 20 dudes in a 7-6K range that I really, really like. And from the 8K range and up, I got like 10, 12. So maybe you are correct about that. I think I'm going to play Hatton as well.
Yeah, I'm certainly going to commit a lot more. You know, obviously I got my show over on Roto Grinders on Wednesday. It's not just a public, you know, push that. It's more about just right now, there's a lot of unknowns here. I want to hear some of the interviews with these guys at the top. You know, it's all these little things that add up, but typically you'll be able to get a little bit of a sense of what's going on, hear a little bit about more about the course. I mean, it's just Monday night right now. We've got 48 hours to make decisions and beyond, but that's, you know, typically where we're at. But right now it's DJ and Hatton. For me, I could see the others. I can hear this. Is the reason I'm, you know, even thinking about Brooks is because I can hear what you said earlier. I just thought about Brooks and Spieth both making noise here, just enough that everyone's talking about him for next week, right? Of course, going into the Masters, is Spieth back? Is Koepka ready to win another major? Blah, blah, blah. Let's wait for it, right? So I don't know. That's all narrative stuff, of course, but the guys I'm actually on are DJ and Hatton at the top. What about this 9K range? Because I think you like Mr. You just said the talent drops off after Hovland, but you're dropping out here the rookie of the year that's right below him that beat him in that match.
Yeah, Scheffler's just not doing it for me here lately. he's a very, very momentum-driven golfer, I think. Like, when he's hot, he's hot. And when he's not, he's not. And I think he's at a point in time where he's just not. So no Scheffler for me. But Victor Hovland is my first cash game cornerstone. If you look at his last 100 rounds on tour, he's top five in this field in approach, tee to green, DraftKings points, birdie or better, strokes gained off the tee, par five scoring. He's also top 10 in 200 proximity from 200 yards plus long par threes. He's really good at. He's third in my model. I'm starting with Hovland in my cash game cornerstone. There's no doubt about that for me. He doesn't miss very many cuts. We usually don't have to worry about that with him. Now, his upside hasn't been the best lately, but, you know, top 15 every time, top 15, top 20s, a bunch of them here recently. Maybe he can make that extra leap and get the top five, maybe even a win. So we're going to start with Victor Hovland. My second cash game cornerstone, I'm going with the fellow Korean, Sungjae Im. Now, Sungjae doesn't live in Houston, so that narrative is sort of off with that. But I
he
know
lives anywhere, doesn't he? He lives in hotels, he lives in people's couches, he goes wherever he wants.
I know he spent time in Houston talking with KJ Choi. KJ Choi is the godfather of Korean golf. That's why all the Koreans live in Houston, because they all want to be around him. He's literally a god to these Korean golfers. Like, this guy came up, he beat Tiger. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, no, that was, I'm sorry, that's the other dude. But he won a Players' Championship. And you know, he's the one that brought Korean men's golf on the map in Korea. So a lot of these guys in the Korean, you know, culture, it's a huge respect for elders. We think that, like, our elders are incredibly knowledgeable just because of the time that they've lived on this world, which is, you know, I think true. And so a lot of these young Korean golfers, they have moved to Texas to be around KJ, to, you know, ask him questions, be what he needs to be. And so Sungjae, I know, has done that. Now, he doesn't live in Houston, but I know he's gone to Houston, visited KJ, talked to him. That's not the narrative I'm going with. The reason I like him is because if you look at what he's done here recently, it looks like his iron game is back. You know, that's what sort of got him, you know, to his win in Honda with a solid iron game. And then when he came back from the break, the COVID break, his iron game looked lost. And he looked lost. But in his last six events, he has not lost strokes with his approaches. And he's also very good off the tee when it comes to being – he's not exceptionally long, but he hits a lot of fairways. And, you know, if that rough is thick and you get a lot of flyer lies, I think that would help. But he's not, like, incredibly short. He's still top half of this field in driving distance. He crushes par fives, you know, good with his longer irons. So I'm a fan of Sungjae. He's my second cash game cornerstone. And the other guy I'm playing in this range is going to be Russell Henley. He's just been playing too well. I thought he peaked a few weeks ago when you looked at, what was it? I didn't play him at the Zozo. I thought he peaked at the CJ Cup. And then he comes back and gains 9.2 strokes with his approaches at the Zozo Championship, you know. And the thing is, if you look at his strokes gained approach in his last 10 rounds, it's sick. 8.2 gained, 6 gained, 1.6, 7.1, 3.2, 4.8, 1.8, 4.1, 3.4, 9.2. And of course, his weakness is been his putter. His best putting surface is Bermuda. So I'm going to go back with it. The guy's just been playing too well for me not to. I'm not sure how many people are going to jump back on his bandwagon with all these other names. Like, you look at the names around him, you know, Hovland, Scheffler, Adam Scott, Sungjae, Sergio. Are you really going to play Henley? Are most people going to click Henley? I doubt it. So we'll see what his ownership is. I don't think it's going to be that high, but I am not an ownership guru. We miss Brad about that. He was the man about that. And, of course, the site I work for and the site you work for both have, you know, Roto-Grinders. They have the ownership projections on there as well. I think it will come out low. So I'm going to play Mr. Russell Henley. Who do you like?
Yeah, definitely like Henley, as you just talked about, for all the same reasons. I remember it was, I think it was 2017 when he won the Shell or whatever. He was like 33-1 and everyone passed. And he, of course, he goes on to win. So everyone, you know, the joke this week is, do they know it's not the same course, that this is totally different? I don't know if they do, but I know that he's been playing some incredible golf. And like you said, it feels just like one of those spots where we'll talk about another one in a minute here. But, you know, at 9,400, it feels like that. For those playing the Jeopardy game home with Kenny, it was Y.E. Yang, who you were talking about, that shocked the world and took down Tiger. So, yeah, but I love your M call. And if we're doing Kenny's Koreans today, and that's probably the title after this of what we're doing here, there's going to be a lot of them that we bring up. I do like the Sungjae M call. Like you said, the irons are back. Honda has even been talked about a little bit just for the fact of, you know, the course style and the greens, everything there, where, you know, some guys that have done well there in Sawgrass are guys that are being brought up for this week as sort of correlations. We talked about not really loving Scott and Garcia. I'm kind of with you there. But here's the deal. I lost to you. Actually, you weren't on last week to the victory lap. But I did just lose to you on the Ricky answer bet when we doubled down tying the first week.
Yep.
I will take the rookie of the year, Scottie Scheffler, over Hovland this week. He actually had an amazing Zozo. So he shook the COVID stuff off that you talked about. He came back at 37th after the COVID. Came back, had a good Zozo. But you might have forgot he's himself as a Texas boy, Kenny. So you got to think, being in this area, being around, you know, this is going to be a spot for him. And this is someone who's not just going to come out and warm up and try anything. He's going to come out and try and win this thing. And if you look at the numbers for him, par five, DK scoring, birdies are better, you know, tee to green, everything has looked good. So I'm definitely back in on Scheffler. And then if you just look at what he's been doing lately, basically, you know, all the stuff, you know, not just the events stats wise, I'm talking about with all of his numbers across the board for like the last 3 months are all extremely solid. And then you look back, you know, like I said, 17th of Zola was dialed in with tee to green and approach. So a little bit wider fairways here, like you talked about, I think you can get away with quite a bit. So those two for me, you know, sorry, three, Scheffler, Henley, and M. And the guy I like actually at the bottom is 9,000 is Jason Day. And just one thing I read today, it was first thing this morning. I can't remember who put it out there, but it was somebody who basically played this course quite a bit recently, local somebody. I think it was retweeted. Mayo might have retweeted it, actually, now that I think about it. And the guy said that, you know, the around the green stuff is where they get you, right? It's going to be that. He's like, you don't always have a good, you know, shot in. The greens are a little bit tricky. Who's the guy in the field that has some of the best around the green game and one of the best putters on tour? And that's Jason Day. So I know what it is with him. Withdraws, the kink in his neck, whatever it was when he was 3 under that day. It was obviously something, but at the same time, he hasn't done much lately. I don't think many will go back to him. And when you think about sort of this range, we're about to get into the 8K range. You got a guy like Lanto Griffin at 8,900. Jason Day, like, I don't know. It's tough for me to avoid at 9,000 with that around the green game and that putter. Getting ready for Augusta, a little bit wider fairways, all the stuff that we just talked about. So I'll take some of him down there at 9K straight as well.
Yeah, I think I can get on board with Jason Day as well. If you look at his stats on Bermuda, third in the field in strokes gained putting in his last 100 rounds, second in DraftKings points, you know, second in strokes gained short game, you know, in the last 100 rounds on Bermuda. I can get down with Jason Day. I've thought about him definitely as well, and you talked me into him once again. So I'll probably play Mr. Day as well in that range. And he's definitely long enough, and if this becomes a course where you need bombers, he fits that narrative with a good putter, that could probably work. All right, so let's go to this 8K range table. Why don't you go ahead?
Well, the thing about Griffin, that's what I want to get to the bottom of, because he's obviously playing some great golf. This is going to be one of the biggest sticker shock price tags we've seen in a while, right? We've been talking about him, the Rick Gaiman rule, 7,000 or 6,900, you know, that backfired at 7,000. He was still good. So is he still good at almost 9,000? I don't know. But, you know, one of the things I thought was really interesting, they talked about on the broadcast there last week, was about him hanging out with Vijay Singh.
I heard that. What a weird combo.
Oh, it's right? The most insane combination. Here's
the thing. If you think about Lanto, he's from Blacksburg, Virginia. Like, I went to Virginia Tech. Like, he's from where I went to school. Like, it's some country, like, cows on a hill, smells like manure type shit, you know, in that neighborhood. Maybe not so much now, but when I went there in 98, that's what it was. You know, and he's I guess 10 years younger than me. So it was still like that when he was growing up. Yeah, and to be friends with Vijay, who pulled a gun out on somebody. Did you ever hear that story about Vijay?
I definitely didn't hear that. He did not hear that story.
There was somebody tailgating him on the road. There was somebody. Either a caddy or somebody was following him after a tournament, and there was somebody tailgating him, I guess, right? And the guy passed him, and Vijay pulled up right next to him with a gun in his hand. I don't know if the story's true,
jeez,
but it's a story that I've heard, with a gun in his hand, like tapping the window and shit. Like, Vijay's probably one of the most hated people on tour. People hate his ass, you know what I'm saying? And to be friends with him is such a weird combo. But go ahead.
No, ain't no fun when Vijay got the gun, that's for sure. But they said that, but the one thing, you know, the key point they were trying to point out, what I couldn't agree more with, I guess, from everything I've seen lately, is just they talked about the grinding aspect and how Vijay just never leaves the course. Obviously, they'd be out there doing a lot of stuff together and just giving him sort of the mindset that he needs. Like you talked about earlier with these guys, KJ Choi, you mentioned you were trying to talk about Y.E. Yang back in the day. Vijay was one of those guys, man. Him, Phil, they were right up there, still in the mix, sort of the only ones that were even odds on have a chance to go against Tiger. Nobody really had a chance, but you know what I mean, right? So
Vijay went toe to toe with Tiger.
Absolutely. So I just think that's interesting, and it makes some sense. You know what we've seen him doing. It's just a name, and this, you know, DraftKings is at least finally respecting him with this price tag. I don't think he'll get very much ownership, especially when you get into these next couple guys here that got all the stats to go with it. Right? You got Doc Redman, Corey Connors. The one thing that worries me about Connors is that same conversation I just had about Jason Day. If it's going to be more about that around the green game and that sort of stuff, that's not really his MO. So he has to be able to make putts. And, you know, we've seen that happen for him at times. But what if the irons are just slightly off or anything? It just could be big trouble for a guy like him there. So I would side with Redman. I've heard some Zach Johnson talk. You know, I'm not really going back there. I think the chalk is sort of what I like here. And that's going to be a couple guys with Siwoo Kim, just too good at 8,300 for what he's been doing, all the numbers across the board, anything of correlations that go with the course, basically, you know, Bermuda greens, we know he loves those, you know, just everything. Even before the restart, he had a good first round at the Players too. A lot are going to talk about Hideki, but he was still right in the mix of things there. That's the Sawgrass side of things. And then Cam Davis. So here's like, this is just a gut feel. I've spent a lot of time. This is the weirdest thing about this event. I feel like the most unprepared as I possibly have ever felt for talking about an event, but I spent some of the most time on it in the past few podcasts because just had time today, and this is one I want to get into. But I just have this gut feel, Kenny, that another Korean, Mr. James Han, is going to do something here at 8,000, that nobody's going to be on him, and Cam Davis nobody. is going to be the chalk for good reason. He's, you know, par five killer, $8,100. We know he just scores like crazy. It's like, how does he meet? There's no way he misses the cut, right? So you want to be on that. But I just have this feeling that, you know, you're going to see James Han do something here at 8,000. And with Cam Davis, you know, being all the ownership here, I think it would be a really good tournament pivot is to go on to a guy like James Han. Do you got anything on Han? Because, you know, besides his recent form, 9th, 6th, and 5th at the Safeway, the Corrales, and the Shriners, I don't think many are talking about him, you know, either way. And it's just going to be a bunch of ownership on Cam Davis. So where are you at in this 8K range? And maybe start with that and then move your way up.
Yeah, I mean, I'm playing all the Koreans, so I'm playing James Han. There's no doubt about that. I wasn't going to bring him up because it's obvious from what I've been saying. I want to play the Koreans. I don't think he lives in Houston either, but I don't care. The form he's on right now is the best form of his career. He's had wins in the past, but they've been out of the fucking blue. You know, he's not the most consistent player out there on tour at all, you know. And so three straight top 10. I mean, you look at his win at Wells Fargo. He missed like 8 cuts before that. You know, so I mean, the guy is not the most consistent dude out there. But and the way he's playing now, maybe he found something. I'll be playing him again. That's probably what I'll do. If you look at his win at Genesis in 2015, I think he had one top 20 with like 5 missed cuts in the 10 events before that. So yeah, I'm in on Han. I like Siwoo Kim, of course. Again, it's easy shit. Play the Koreans. I also do like Doc this week a lot. I think he's on the verge. He's coming close. He had the 54-hole lead going into the event last week, I think. I'm pretty sure. So I think he's on the verge. I'm back with him. And I am playing Zach Johnson this week. 4 wins in Texas. The guy, if it's windy, he could play in that area. His form has really come back to life after struggling here a bit. I think he makes a better cash play probably than a GPP play this week, just because, you know, his upside might be a little bit capped. But even when he was playing poorly, he didn't miss many cuts. If you look since the restart, it hasn't been the best form until the last 3 weeks he's played. Maybe until the Wyndham, but he's only missed a couple of cuts since the restart. He doesn't miss many at all. So I like him probably better for cash this week. And so that, I'm iffy on Cam Davis because he fits the model. What we're looking for, length, what I'm looking for, length, good on par fives, you know, a little worried about his longer iron play. But, you know, again, an Aussie who deals with the wind pretty well, and I'm hearing 25-mile-per-hour gusts on the weekend, so we'll see. That's something that's going to be a weather-related pick for me. We'll see how it goes as the week progresses. Let's move on to the 7K range, and I'll go with my final two cash game cornerstones. My first one is going to be, hold on, let me look here. It's going to be Sam Burns at $7,500. The thing about Sam, one of the best putters on Bermuda, second in strokes gained putting in his last 100 rounds on Bermuda, 11th at DK points in the same stat. The guy has been playing pretty decent golf, pretty consistent golf. Not that many missed cuts here recently. And, of course, Bermuda is his betting best putting surface. I think he's missed maybe three cuts since the restart. He's probably missed like four of his last 15, 16 cuts. And at $7,500, I sort of like that when it comes down to him. You know, off the tee, he's very, very strong. So I like him at that cheap price of $7,500 to make the cut. Again, you know, a really good off the tee, long and off the tee. Par five scoring, top five in this field in the last 100 rounds. And like I said, there's five par fives. He can really go off on those with his length. So I like Sam Burns. And my final guy is going to be the Mr. Cutmaker himself down below, Adam Shank, who's made like, I don't know, 10, 11, 12 straight cuts in a row. And at $7,100 as your cheapest play in cash, I will definitely go to him. If you look, he's also, you know, long enough, really good on longer par threes. And then, you know, Bermuda is by far his best putting surface there is. If you look a little bit more recent in form, you know, everything's been there that we're looking for, that we like. Let me go ahead and look at him. You know, again, and the thing is, he's been really good around the green here recently. So if it does get windy and he do have to miss some greens, he can get it up and down with the best of them, at least what he's proven to me recently. So I like Adam Shank. So my four cash game cornerstones this week are going to be Victor Hovland at $9,800, Sungjae Im at $9,300. Then we got Sam Burns at $7,500 and Adam Shank at $7,100. This leaves like, I don't know, like 15,800 or something like that. It leaves a lot left on the board. I mean, plenty to go fill out the rest of your lineup. Other guys, if we go back up to the top of the range, I'm going back to – I like this range so much. I can talk about the 7K range all day. I'm going back to Denny again. You know, the guy's just a birdie machine, really good on par fives, even though he's not that long. He's been playing really good. I told you about the swing coach that he's got, that he's working on, so it looks like his tee to green game's been a lot better. I'm going back to the well on Harold Varner as also this week. You know, I know he hurt a lot of people's feelings last week. People might be off of him. I think he makes a great GPP play at that price. And if you look at his long-range form, you know, one of the best from 200+. And there's going to be a lot of shots from that range. Really good on long par threes. I think everything fits for him for this type of course. I think last week was just an aberration. I think Friday with the wind, it just got to him. And hopefully he can make the cut and do something if it's windy on the weekend. Other guys, Erik van Rooyen, another guy who I think is going to go underlooked at this range. Again, another spectacular long iron player, really good off the tee. He has that special thing of length and accuracy that you're looking for. You know, he's not exceptionally long, but I think he's like top 50 in this field when it comes to driving distance. Wyndham Clark, I'm going back to him as well this week. Now, I think this course fits his game better than Bermuda, and hopefully he can come back. I probably won't be heavy on him. But, I mean, just his length and his par five acumen, I think I like him in that. Why don't you go over this top range?
I think we got the whole 7K range there.
I know, right?
No, I'm just kidding. I think Denny, who you mentioned, I'll go back to. Some of these price changes are just insane, right? Like, Denny's down to 7,900 after that outing. Werner's at 7,800 and missed the cut. One guy comes fourth, one guy misses the cut, and that's the pricing decrease. Just odd to me. So both of those guys, EVR, who you mentioned, Wyndham Clark back on him, sprinkling some Gooch. Fratelli was one you didn't mention. I like Burns, who you're on already. Don't got to rehash that one because everything you said with stats, Bermuda greens, all that stuff. But Fratelli was good at the Zozo, I believe it was. And just in the last 3 months, his stats have been solid. Bermuda is his better surface. He's not really a great putter. But the big thing that stood out to me was par five scoring, tee to green in general, and around the green. So I think all those things could add up. The ability to get some upside here. And then after that, it drops down. I like Aaron Wise after that, just already liked him last week, par three, par five scoring, some other stuff that adds up. I heard some mention a little bit about this course with the trees missing, almost being like the, Trinity Forest, right? So if you go back to that's where he got his win at. So I do like Aaron Wise at 7,400. Piercy, I'll go back to Keegan Bradley just for some upside. I kind of like those guys. I don't know what to do with Norlander because I'm with you on Shank. The thing about Shank was we mentioned on last week's show, and again, another guy gets a huge price drop. Since the Safeway, he's just getting better. 61st, 56th, 32nd, 27th, and then last week, 26th, and he honestly could have done better.
Well, he was top five or top 10 going into Sunday. He sort of fell apart. I think he was maybe top 10. I think it was 7 or 8 under going into Sunday, and he just couldn't get anything done after that.
Definitely a disappointing finish versus what it could have been. Still a good finish, and at 8,100, but now it's 7,100. That to me is just crazy. So hopefully people are playing a little bit more of, Ollie. But there's other guys there. Higgs, Straka. There's a bunch of guys you can play. So the 7K range is definitely loaded, but it's where you can sort of sprinkle guys around. I think it's still going to come down to what you do at the top. I still feel like somebody up there is going to pull through. I'm just not sure exactly who yet. But like I said, I like DJ and Hatton up there, but. Yeah, I don't know. There's a bunch of guys in this range. Do you have anybody else at the bottom of this range before we go to the 6K?
One guy I'm playing is JT Poston. I'll play him at 7,500. Again, another great Bermuda putter. And short game, really good, especially when it comes to Bermuda greens. And of course, short game adds the putting involved with that, so that definitely helps. I like JT Poston a lot in tournaments this week, probably one of my favorite plays in tournaments. This week in the 7K range. I think he's going to go looked over. I think his ownership is going to be single digits, and he already has a win, and I think he can contend.
Yeah, well, I think it was, wasn't it Wyndham or Sedgefield, another Bermuda greens course where he made no bogeys the entire week and won the tournament. Mm-hmm. So there's that. I think that's interesting. And then let's go to the 6K range because here's where you get your Koreans, Kenny, that reside in Texas. Danny Lee, Sung Kang, there's a couple that I'll name for you. But did you know this? Did you know Sung Kang? I know he goes by his actual name is Kang Sung Hoon, but Sung Kang is the actual name of Han from Fast and the Furious, the actor.
Yeah, I've talked about that before. Yes, I definitely know that. Yes, so Han from Fast and the Furious, we are definitely playing him this week at $6,200. Definitely playing him this week. I hear the next Fast and Furious movie is going to be in space. Random. I just read about it, so I think it's going to be in space. So we'll see.
That's when you know there's too many Fast and Furious.
Yeah, I know. Well, shut it down. You know about the Tom Cruise movie too. Tom Cruise is actually filming in space.
See, this is crazy, man.
He's filming a movie in space. We're going off the handles here, but I just read some movie shit and I thought that was fucking incredible. But go on. Who do you like in the 6K range?
I thought you were going to take it away. I got too excited there. I was giving you all the Asians. I do like Danny Lee, who I talked about. I've been hinting at this the last little while. We know he can make birdies. It's, the type of course where he would pop at. I think this is a good spot. And then, many don't know, but he works with swing coach George Gankus, the same guy who works with Matt Wolf and them. And you always see him posting stuff about him. He's looking good. I think he's a spot you could go to at 6,400. I think that's a good play. I'll go back to Will Gordon. I didn't do too well last week, but he did enough, and now he gets dropped even further at 6,400. So I like him for a made cut, maybe get a little bit more experience under his belt, come back from that. Who else? A couple guys I had tagged up here. Tom Hoagie. Oh, Carlos Ortiz. Definitely like some Carlos Ortiz at 6,700. Mark Hubbard, a guy I like if he gets that putter hot. Max Homa. I'm just looking for upside down here, Kenny. And then not really much more beyond that. I guess Bo Hostler, I've heard mentioned a few times, you know, the narrative of, you know, Texas guy, as well as, you know, almost winning it. Not at this course, of course, but, you know, almost winning this Houston Open when, as I mentioned at the top of the show, I had my biggest weekend ever and Poulter stole it away. So I was happy to see that happen. I know some others weren't, but other than that, man, you mentioned it, Sung Kang down at 6,200. And then lastly, Keith Mitchell, same price tag, Bermuda, long hitter, five par fives. Let's go. And Sam Ryder. And Sam Ryder. I always play Sam Ryder.
There's a bunch of guys down here. I always play Maverick Menealy. It's my FOMO play because I think he's a pretty good golfer. Even though, you know, his tee to green game isn't the best, he's a really good putter. So I'm going McNealy. I like Stallings. If it gets windy, he has a piercing low ball flight. Really good with his long irons. One of the best on long par threes. So I like Scott Stallings. I like Ortiz like you. I like Gordon like you. I like Sung Kang like you. I want to play some Patrick Rogers. He's been playing like ass, but again, we're back on Bermuda. Maybe his putter hasn't been good at all. Maybe he can get back on track with that. Andrew Putnam, another guy, Bermuda Beauties. That's who we're playing this week. I like Andrew Putnam. And I think I'll probably take a risk on Vegas. He's been playing like straight ass, but again, University of Texas grad, used to this wind. If you look at his long-term stats, you know, he's 11th in my model at $6,600 in the last 100 rounds, you know, with his length and his par five acumen, and, you know, really good with his longer irons. He hasn't been recently, but maybe he can turn a dial it up to where he was on, you know, sort of a home game for him. I don't know how close Austin is, but close enough. He's got to be used to the wind and stuff like that. So I'll play a little bit of Vegas.
Right on.
All right, so let's go to bets. Tambo, who you got?
I got five this week. I got Sungjae, 33. I got Jason Day, 40. I got Siwoo, 50. And then I got two just crazy bombs. Danny Lee, 175-1 with the top five each way. And Keith Mitchell, 251 with the top five each way.
All right, so I'm going seven bets this week, but five of them are 80-1 or higher. So the two favorites that I'll bet on is Sungjae at 28-1, Doc at 50-1. And then I got five long shots. Harold Varner, 80-1. JT Poston, 100-1. Sam Burns, 100-1. Will Gordon, 150-1. Sung Kang, 500-1.
Geez, there it is, man. Han, 500-1.
I'm going Han and 500-1 this week. So
space bet. Space bet at 500-1.
Yep. Right. So one and done.
Yeah. Whoever you got. Like, I'm so dead in one and done.
Yeah, me too.
It's a strategy game now, right? For you, if you're there, you gotta, I don't think you're looking for a skin or anything like that unless you're completely out of it. That's what I'll be looking for. So I shouldn't say that. There's strategy to it. I'm dead. I'm looking for a skin. So I'm gonna play whoever that nobody's playing. It's gonna be completely random. And it won't be Sung Kang because somebody's gonna listen to this and see the Kenny's Koreans title and then take away Sung Kang. So I'm still gonna have to go even deeper than that. But if you're in the mix and you got something on the go there, just worry about getting who's going to make you the most money. Obvious, but easy. You'll just follow it and do that. If you're out of it completely like me, don't even bother trying, in my opinion, and just go after the skin.
Don't try. And get somebody else. Just forget. Give up.
Pack it in. Exactly. You got it.
I'm either going to be Poston or Burns because I'm in the same level as you. I'm trying to get a skin.
Yeah, so, none of those are skins. Those guys aren't skin guys. You need to way off the board. No, go back. Go to Brian Gay. That's how you get a skin.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see how that goes. I think I'm going Poston or Burns, so we'll see how that goes. All right. So that's going to be it for this week. You can find me at KendoVT, of course, on Twitter. Also, you can find my article on Gup's Corner. We are doing a free preview this week for all written content. So my article will be free. Also, my favorite – I'll have my favorite picks, my favorite bets – all that good stuff on Wednesday, and the Giants just scored, so I'm hyped because I took the Giants plus 13 to keep this NFL thing rolling, trying to win eight in a row. But yes, just go on Gup's Corner, do your thing. You can find a promo code on my Twitter feed.
Jeez. Minus 13 on the alternate spread. I was going to say, anyone who is against Trump has got to be worried if you're going
plus
that
hard. Plus 13.
I got you, man. So and keep the streak alive. You said it. Yeah. You can find me on Twitter at Toteg and Tambo. Add me there. Hit me up if you have any questions. Other than that, find me on rotogrinders.com. You use the link, rotogrinders.com/dgen. Check out everything over there. Doing a lot of free content there as well, right? You got my podcast every Thursday for the Tourney Takes Pod with Kirkwood and Killa B. That's a good one if you guys are into NFL. And then lots of stuff through over the weekend, too, that you can check out. So Sunday show is all free before lock. Other than that, good luck this week, guys, and I'll let Kenny take us out of here.
All right, 1 week until the Masters, but we got the Houston Open first. Play all the fucking Koreans, and let's win some motherfucking money. DGEN Nation.